The January 6th House hearings continue as today marked the fourth public hearing this month. The committee discussed former President Trump's pressure campaign when he urged state officials and state legislatures to, quote, find the votes that would swing voting results in his favor for the 2020 presidential election. Today's hearings also discussed the threats made to state and local officials who would not comply to Trump's pressure campaign. Let's take a moment to listen to some of those threats shared publicly in today's hearings.
Public pressure on state officials often grew dangerous in the lead up to January 6th.
Let us in! Let us in! Let us in! Let us in!
Special session!
We'll light the whole shit on fire.
What are we going to do? What can you and I do to a state legislator besides kill him? Although, we should not do that. I'm not advising that, but I mean, what else can you do, right?
The punishment for treason is death.
At the hearing, members of the House said Trump's false claims about election fraud helped create the violence of what became the January 6th Capitol attack. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What was your reaction to what came out of today's hearings? Did anything surprise you? What are your thoughts on the pressure campaign toward officials in a number of states? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's the author of the book Politainment, The 10 Rules of Contemporary Politics. David, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure to be here again. Thank you to the audience.
Well, what we learned more about today was, I think, the extent of the campaign to pressure officials in state legislatures, secretaries of state, and others. What stood out to you along those lines, David?
To me, what stood out to me was a quote by Rudy Giuliani at one point, who said, we have lots of theories, but not a lot of evidence regarding fraud, or something to that effect. And why I mention that is because what we had across states like Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia, which came out today, is that there are all kinds of theories being cooked up regarding voter fraud, all types of theories being cooked up about how maybe alternate electors could be picked, or how people could throw out the results of an election or decertify it. These were the theories, but there was no evidence to support any of the claims about fraud. And so, to me, that quote sums up a lot today. But I also want to say, and again, when you did the introduction, you pointed out I teach election law also at the University of Minnesota. I've been teaching election law for 25 years. And when I was listening to the testimony today, I thought to myself, nobody in their right mind would think that any of these theories had any merit. And the Speaker of the House from Arizona, I think, brought that up really well by saying, there's no evidence, there's no theory. You're asking me to do something that has never been done in American history. That's what stood out for me today.
I want to listen to Arizona Republican State House Speaker Rusty Bowers. He said he did not tell Trump that Trump had won Arizona, contrary to a statement from the former president just earlier today. Here is Bowers talking, saying a member of Congress had also urged him to overturn Arizona's results.
And what did Mr. Biggs ask you to do?
I believe that was the day that the vote was occurring, to each state to have certification, or to declare the certification of the electors. And he asked if I would sign on both to a letter that had been sent from my state, and or that I would support the decertification of the electors. And I said I would not.
Let's talk more about House Speaker Rusty Bowers from Arizona, Republican, conservative. Can you talk about his testimony, what he said about the pressure from the president, members of Congress, as we just heard, and others?
It was a powerful testimony, and it's also important to underscore that he said he voted for Trump in 16, voted for Trump in 20, wanted him to win, but he started to describe this intense pressure being brought to bear upon him in terms of what recalls from the White House, in terms of, I'm going to maybe use the word almost like haranguing from Mayor Giuliani. And what he described here was how there were claims that about 200,000 people who had voted illegally, including dead people voting, illegal immigrants, et cetera, undocumented individuals. And he asked for proof of this. And Giuliani never forwarded it. And then asked for justification, argument for why he should be able to certify the election, and pressed arguments to him, that is by Giuliani. And when he was pushed back, that is when the speakers pushed back and said, we've never been asked to do this before. It was just the intensity of the pressure that I think that was so interesting. And I thought, and I'd be curious what the listeners think too, I thought his testimony was just intensely powerful in terms of somebody who said, I supported Trump, but I took an oath of office to the Constitution and I had to follow what the Constitution says. I think that was pretty powerful testimony in terms of describing his role and in terms of describing the unprecedented level of pressure upon state officials when there's no legal or factual basis to support the claims.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Talking to David Schultz from Hamline University and the University of Minnesota about today's January 6th committee hearing in the U.S. House. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in Spring Green. Michael, hi.
Hi, I've been listening on the radio, Wisconsin Public Radio, to the hearings today, January 6th committee, and I did hear Ron Johnson's name come up quite a few times, but I'm really not clear what his role is in all of this, and I was wondering if your guests could articulate that for us.
Yeah, that Michael, thanks for bringing that up. The committee shared a text thread from Senator Johnson's aide, is newly appointed that day chief of staff on January 6, 2021. Text, Johnson needs to hand something to V. POTUS, Vice President of the United States. Please advise. That's going to a Mike Pence staffer. The staffer replies, what is it? Riley, the Johnson staffer, says alternate slate of electors for MI and WI because archivist didn't receive them. And then the Penn staffer says, do not give that to him. So an apparent offer from a Johnson staffer, a Senator Johnson staffer, to bring these so-called alternate electors, a phony or fake electors, people are calling them. David, a lot of people in Wisconsin watching this, what do you think?
This is pretty significant because if this is accurate in terms of this recount, this is starting to connect now Senator Ron Johnson to this larger process of a legal theory of trying to say we can submit alternative electors. Even though we know that this is illegal or not possible to do this, and part of this larger argument that's being made today that the whole idea of fabricating an alternative set of electors, of questioning the certification, was really meant to undermine confidence and create confusion going into Congress, with the hope then that Mike Pence would say, well, we can't be sure, you know, who are the right electors at this point. And so this is important because this is now potentially connecting a member of Congress, again, a representative, senator from Wisconsin, to this broader, let's say, conspiracy involving January 6th.
Johnson's office put out a statement today, quoting here, the senator had no involvement in the creation of an alternate set of electors and had no foreknowledge is going to be delivered to our office. This is a staff-to-staff exchange. His new chief of staff contacted the vice president's office, end quote, going on saying, they said we didn't want it, so we didn't bring it to them, but not denying that there was an offer to transmit that slate of electors. Members of the House committee said, maybe we do want to talk to Senator Johnson about this, but I think that's about where they left it on that. Now, talking about this so-called fake elector thing. Now, some of the people involved here in Wisconsin said, we weren't trying to do something that was going to affect January 6th directly. We were saying, if these court challenges, even if they're long shots, if these court challenges tip the balance toward Donald Trump in Wisconsin, here we are. We need to be registered as electors in case things change. We need Republican electors. How is that ultimately used leading up to January 6th?
Well, how it's used at this – well, first off, by the way, by the time we still have these fake electors being talked about, it's well past the court challenges are done, well past the certification of the election. So at this point, there really is no reason to keep sort of pushing this idea of alternative electors that are out there. On top of which, What was happening is that they were submitting fraudulent documents saying that what they in fact were the rightfully chosen electors. So this is a problem with fraud. And so all of this fits into January 6th in a couple of ways. One, in terms of the, again, creating supposedly the confusion that would give the vice president justification to say, we just don't know who the correct electors are in Wisconsin. Therefore, let's set them to the side. Let's maybe have an investigation or something like that. But also this fed into the narrative leading into the speech for Donald Trump on January 6th is saying we have what? We have widespread voter fraud out there, or officials are doing things to prevent legitimate electors, that is our electors, from being seated. So this is where it fits in. Although we don't have the full pieces or all the pieces of the puzzle in place yet, this is where it seems to be going at this point.
David Schultz is with us, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota, with us today to talk about today's January 6th public hearings and claims of election fraud from then-President Trump. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your questions. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota, author of the book Politainment, The 10 Rules of Contemporary Politics, looking at today's hearing of the House January 6th Committee. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, your reactions. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Samantha is with us in Whitehall. Samantha, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Love the show. Anyway, I was just kind of wondering why people are believing all this crap, you know, even whether you like Trump or you don't, or you wanted Biden or you don't, or whatever, because I've got some friends that are convinced, well, the one passed away, but when he was still alive, and his wife is still alive, but they were convinced that Biden stole the election. And they were just totally convinced about it, just like with the coronavirus. They're convinced that there's stuff and they're not going to take it because they believe this stuff. Now, why do people believe those are just two good incidences? But why do people believe that there's all this junk about those two things or anything, but not want to, you know, go research it first to see, did Biden really do this? Is there aborted fetuses in this coronavirus or anything else? They did, you know, in the shot or anything else.
Gotcha, Samantha. Thanks for the call. So, David, we have this contrast in real time. We're hearing tape of Georgia officials patiently explaining what had happened in their election. That information is there in real time. But there is a reality, as Samantha says, that a lot of people still believe a lot of the claims that were being debunked as early as December of 2020. Yeah.
Okay, there's a couple of things going on here. First off, when the president of the United States says something, generally that person carries a lot of weight in terms of what they have to say. We want to hope that they're truthful, that they're credible. And also, the president of the United States gets a lot of media attention. And so for a lot of people, if the president says something, they're going to naturally believe him. I think a second thing that's going on here is the fact that we clearly have bubbles that we live in. We've talked all about this, you know, that we live in our little bubbles on the social media. We live in our bubbles with our friends and so forth. And everybody else around us believes the same thing. If all of my friends are saying, I voted for Donald Trump, and you're wondering, my gosh, everybody I know voted for Donald Trump. How could Biden have won? And then finally, you know, we're looking at, a media environment now that is so fragmented that you have what, Fox News, for example, that's broadcasting one set of facts or one set of opinions regarding what happened. So put these all together, the bubbles, the president speaking, sort of the bully pulpit that he gets, and sort of, let's say, the fractured media, those become pretty powerful, and they help reinforce what cognitive scientists say is what our own confirmation biases. We look out there, we search for information that confirms our biases. And so all kinds of reasons why that's happening. And to this day, we have lots of people who are still probably saying, well, gosh, I still think the election was stolen because the ex-president says so. All my friends voted for Trump. I think that's partly what's going on here. Certainly not a definitive answer, but part of the answer.
Thanks for the call. Just before we go back to callers, a running theme today was whether it's a elected Republican in Arizona or Georgia or election officials. We heard from Shay Moss and then tape testimony from her mom, Ruby Freeman. The threats, the harassment in person, at their houses, death threats, rape threats to spouses that came out of all of this. What did we see there today?
Yeah, well, it's probably bad enough that we saw efforts to try to come up with fabricated theories or fabricated evidence, but this was really kind of, I don't know, thuggish behavior also we're hearing about here, where people, including longstanding Republicans, not that it's justified for anybody, but including people who are longstanding Republicans, were essentially, you know, threatened. I mean, as I'm listening to it, I think of the words like thuggery, or I think of what, almost like extortion, or it sort of sounded like, I don't know, almost like an organized crime type of effort to try to pressure people or threaten people. And that's a pretty scary notion that's coming out in terms of these threats of force, these threats of coercion against officials or their family or children. This is the first, I think, really today that I've really heard of that. And I think it's one of the more depressing or dark bits of new information that came out today.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I think you'll agree with me that Trump was president officially until January 20th. So he had a responsibility as the executive branch to make sure that the election was fair and whatnot. So my question is this. If Trump was so wrong in asking for a delay in the Electoral College vote to investigate claims of fraud, why did several U.S. senators agree with him and urge the same thing, including Ted Cruz and other senators? I think there was close to a dozen senators urging a delay in the Electoral College vote.
Jeff, thanks for the call. There were other senators. I believe Senator Johnson had planned to at least object to some of the counts as well, but changed after the insurrection. David, the role of some Republican U.S. senators also asking for a delay.
Okay, first I want to point out and say that by the time we got to January 6th, we had already had extensive litigation, I think over 60 cases brought that Trump had lost. There had been recounts, there had been state certifications, so that by the time we got to January 6th, it was overwhelming that there was no voter fraud, there was no dispute at this point. Trump had his opportunity through his attorneys and he lost. Now, part of what I'm thinking we're going to start to hear now moving forward after today's hearing is who else was involved? Who else has been involved in terms of any types of conspiratorial action?
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Tom now in Madison. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon. I think in the full course of time, it will be revealed that Donald Trump's life was criminal enterprise from the get-go. But the point I want to make is that we have here in Wisconsin a member of our Wisconsin Elections Commission, Bob Spindell, who served as a false and faithless elector. And he has not been disciplined, sanctioned, or removed from that body. And I have a big problem with that. This guy who's on a board to oversee our elections participated in outright fraudulent activity.
Tom, thanks for the call. David, is it inherently fraudulent for that? He is right. Bob Spindell is on the Elections Commission, also one of the would-be electors. Is it fraud, as Tom suggests? And you might have to get a bit lawyerly here. I don't know.
Okay, is it fraud? If in fact I don't think it's fraud per se. Could there be conflicts of interest? Could there have been something that he could be prosecuted for in terms of fraud in a different, I guess I'm going to rephrase myself here and say that there could be criminal fraud if in fact he tried to do certain things that he knew were deceptive, with the effort of trying to maybe obstruct a governmental proceeding or deceive public officials. So in that sense, maybe you're right. Maybe it is the caller's right. Maybe there is some type of criminal fraud here about that action. Him serving on the board, though, may be a different issue about conflicts of interest. But you may have both of those issues potentially applying to him.
Thanks for the call. We heard from Chris in Prairie du Sac, who wonders if the outcome of the hearings here might or might not lead to former President Trump being charged with something. What are your thoughts on what would go into making that decision? Won't ask you to predict what's going to happen, though.
Sure, sure. I've always thought that the hearings from the opening night with Representative Cheney sounded like the beginning of a criminal trial, her opening statement and laying out the arguments. And potentially the president could be charged with efforts to try to obstruct or impede a government proceeding, that is the counting of electoral votes. He could be, and there's been investigations in Georgia regarding was he trying to intimidate public officials. And depending on where they go, these hearings could, and we don't know, could lead to an indictment of the president or the former president of the United States. That's one of the possible end games for these hearings. And we're just going to have to see if that's where it goes.
And briefly, what are you watching for now? The next hearing scheduled for Thursday afternoon.
What I'm looking for at this point is, again, now trying to connect in. Perhaps connect in some members of Congress, trying to connect in the efforts between what was done at the state level and what done at the congressional level. But mostly I'm looking to see how they start to now show a broader conspiracy, starting to connect all these different things that we're seeing out there. The January 6th riot, what the president was doing, what at the federal level, what's happening with Pence, what's happening at the state level. Can they now start to tie all this together? That's what I want to see.
David, thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you to the audience.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University and of law at the University of Minnesota, author of the book Politainment, The 10 Rules of Contemporary Politics. David joined us to talk about today's January 6th hearings and former President Trump's 2020 pressure campaign.